All right, we got Steve Meller, founder of Career Competitor. We were talking right before this. I think there's a lot of synergy going from high-performance athletics to podcasting to starting a business. Really excited to hop into this one. You're an author. Thanks so much for coming on.
Antonio, Landon, appreciate being here, guys. Honestly, I've been looking forward to it. It's been on the calendar for a couple months. And so, yeah, just been looking forward to being with you.
Sorry for making you, sorry for the delay on the couple months. We are blessed with the opportunity of having abundance on the podcast, but it's also to the downside of it is like, we sometimes say, hey, come on our podcast, but you can't come on for like 6 months. So thank you so much for being here, man. I hear the accent. We were talking about it before. You were originally from England. Walk us through kind of your story on how you went from, you know, England to the US, your swim journey, all that stuff.
Yeah, I'm based in Louisiana, Baton Rouge, Louisiana now. So I get that question a lot. You can imagine how does a guy from the northwest of England end up in Baton Rouge, Louisiana? And so the fun way that I like to tell people is I swam here, you know, just in the sense of swimming was my be all and end all throughout my childhood into my teenage years. And then things started to really kick in around 17, 18. Opportunity came to come over to the U.S. Collegiate system. I was recruited by North Carolina State Wolfpack and spent 6 years in the end in Raleigh, 4 years doing undergrad competing, and then found swim coaching off the back of that while I obtained my master's degree, staying at the university as well. And I fell in love with swim coaching. It was the last thing I had on my radar. I did not think that's where I'd be going. And lo and behold, upon graduation, I took a chance and applied to a couple of pretty high-profile universities, and LSU being one of them. And incredibly, I had a couple of connections there that I didn't necessarily appreciate that I had, and had a few people put in a good, good word for me. And here I am, kind of having lived in Baton Rouge almost 13 years now. Left some coaching about 3 years ago, but spent the better part of a decade being a coach here with LSU swimming and diving team.
So how does your athletic career then take you towards, then into swim coaching, but then into career coaching? Walk us through the evolution of that.
Yeah, it's funny because the whole time I operated in the world of swim coaching, the title never resonated with me. I never felt like a swim coach. Like almost all my counterparts came from this kinesiology background, science background, and I was a communication media major. And it's just like, it didn't add up in terms of being in this world of sport. And so the way in which most coaches would zig, as I like to say, I would zag. And so coaches would go to the science, they'd go to the textbook, they'd go to the training. And it's not that I didn't necessarily believe in those things, but I was always leaning on relationships, the quality of the relationships with my athletes, the way in which I would pour into an individual to help them see what I could see in them. And so for me to do that the way I did and see the results that I saw, I knew I could be successful in that world, and I was. But then I got to this point where this consistent knocking kept coming internally of just, there's something else here. There's something more beyond this tiny, tiny world of swimming, where you can be continuing to do things very similarly to the way you're doing it now, probably just not toward people wearing Speedos, you know, people wearing clothes, people in an office, whatever it may be, in front of an audience, whatever it might be, all these different ways that I knew I could be of service and impact. And it was actually when I started my podcast is when this whole evolution truly took off in 2018. I started the podcast, I called it Career Competitor. And the whole premise of the podcast at the time was just to speak to former athletes about how it is they're succeeding in whatever respective field they're in now, but relying on very similar attributes and qualities that made them the athlete that they once were. So just being able to see the connection there and helping athletes see that connection most importantly as well. And over time, more and more people took interest in the show, and suddenly people were coming to me like, hey, I don't have much of a sports background, but I'm competitive. This is my journey. I'm like, yeah, sure. Why not? Let's do it. Come on the show. And it just kept evolving. It kept growing. And funnily enough, about three and a half years into the show, this is probably about a year or so after COVID, and I've been spending some time thinking about things anyway, people kept giving me this constant feedback. Like, you have a way of hearing, you have a way of listening, and then you have a way of asking questions, which shows that you're kind of going beyond just an interview. You know, you're actually making this about listening to someone on their level and trying to draw from them something that maybe, firstly, listeners need to hear, but secondly, maybe even they themselves don't realize they're saying, like really challenging people within the interview to build upon something that they've either provided insight in, but almost regurgitate it back to them in a way where they hear it and they go, oh shoot, I didn't realize I was saying that, but that's powerful now that you've said it that way. And I was coaching. I didn't know that's what I was doing, but I was coaching, and people kept giving me this feedback. And lo and behold, life found, I found the right position in my life where it made sense to make that jump out of some coaching, start my business completely from scratch, obviously with this network within the podcast, but that was it. And I just made the jump, and 2.5 years later, the jump's been pretty good so far. So
that's an awesome story. Awesome story. And it's actually crazy. So I remember when we initially like looked into you to have you come on the podcast, we looked up, you know, the surface level story of your journey, which is great to hear you kind of unpack it a little bit more and go deeper. The reason we started the Consistency Wins podcast back in 2019 was for a very similar reason as how you started yours, which is the reality of a lot of athletes lose their identity after sports are over. And there's some good qualities that you carry with you that never leave you. And so how do we channel that energy into what we would call being a business athlete? Because ultimately that athlete will never leave you. How were those transitions for you? Because we kind of brushed over your stint at NC State as a swimmer, but how was that transition from you as a college athlete to now a coach in that space? Like, did you feel like, you know, I'll just stop there. How was that transition for you? And then also, how was the transition for you from being a coach in the swimming space to now being a coach in a broader pond?
Yeah, the one word is difficult, to your point. Like, again, I think few people, I talk about it so much, and with people privately, it's like getting people to understand that you look at the world of sport and you look at athletes and you go, they got it all. They got it all right. They have no reason to be complaining. They have no reason to be upset about anything. And what people don't appreciate is that they are building an identity in their sport. And once the sport is taken away, they feel as though the identity goes with it. And that is a terrifying position to be in for anybody at any point in life, whether it be sport you're coming out of or whatever passion that you've maybe had up to a point in life. And it's now run its course. You know, this is stuff that we deal with, but for whatever reason, we don't have much of a conversation about it around sport. Now, that's changing a lot. It has done in the last 5 years or so, at least, with folks like yourself, myself, and many other, you know, non-for-profits that are out there now doing some awesome work around this stuff. But that initial transition from swimming into coaching, I would say at first, I felt as though there was no Steve without swimming. There was no Steve without swimming. That was the first thing I was able to eventually get to and realize. Now, I lived for a good 6 to 12 months after swimming not accepting that. And that's why life was pretty damn hard for that year. And over time, as I started to work on myself, create a little bit more self-awareness and kind of say, dude, why have you just been consistently getting in your own way since you left swimming? And that was it. Even though I was already moving into swim coaching, I was consistently getting in my own way from actually personally developing, because I wasn't allowing myself to say that chapter's over now. And this is an opportunity. You're not actually discontinuing Steve. This is an opportunity to actually evolve as Steve. This is an opportunity to move forward and maybe create Steve 2.0. Like, what does that discussion look like, and what might we be able to explore if we go into that space? What's cool about having gone through that and being very fortunate to go through that quicker than a lot of people, like 6 to 12 months really in the span of life isn't too long a period of time. Once I got into swim coaching, I was doing a lot of that damage control with the athletes before they graduated. I would, again, going back to my coaching philosophy, I wanted to be able to build the person behind the performer. And that is something that I take into my business today. I can sit with a C-suite executive in a one-on-one coaching session and tell them, like, if you want to make this about you, the executive, that's fine. I'm just telling you right now, there's a person behind that title. And whenever you want to have a conversation about that person, I'm ready to have that conversation too, because that actually will make the executive better as opposed to the other way around, you know? And so like that's stuff that I'm so blessed now. I consider myself so blessed to have gone through that, to have come out of that. And then to your question, Landon, like going from swim coaching into then coaching, again, I'd done so much work on myself and was pouring into so many. That jump was actually super simple. Like, again, it's scary starting a business. That was the scary part, but that was external to me. I was so sure of who I was at that point and what I wanted because of all that work I'd done previously, that transition I can look back on now 2.5 years ago and be like, that was like a weekend. I did that in like a weekend, and it was pretty sweet that I was able to go through that in a weekend. You know, man,
where was Steve when we were in college, Landon, and helping us bridge that gap? I think that's really well said, And I think a lot of college coaches need to hear about that, because if you're able to coach your, like, you don't ever want to, it's a double-edged sword almost, right? Because you're trying to walk them through what life after sports is going to look like, but also try and get them to the next level in sports at the same time. But at the end of the day, no matter where they go, there's going to be an end. Even if they go to the top level of the whole thing, eventually you age out of the sport itself. I'd love to learn, to the next side of things, what your business model looks like though now. So when I hear career coaching, I'm thinking people that are, you know, looking to find careers and then you're helping them navigate that world. I could be totally wrong, kind of in the dark here. Walk us through what your business looks like.
Yeah. And so the name is so funny. I always kind of battle the name of Career Competitor, and it's probably not a good thing from a business standpoint. I got some work to do there, but at the same time, I actually enjoy then explaining it to people and saying, it's not necessarily career coaching. It's about making a career of competing on behalf of your best self, you know, making a career of competing on behalf of your best self, which is why it's not necessarily career coaching as much as it is high performance and executive coaching. Because those are the folks that have decided that they've gotten to that point within their careers now where they are playing in the fractions, in the 1% and the 2% of how can I find a way to shift? How can I still find a way to grow? How can I still find a way to get better? And it's funny, we're talking about this right now. I was joking about this with a former athlete of mine. And this is, again, an example of the relationships I built during that time. About a month ago, he's trying to do a startup. He's about 4 or 5 months into creating this awesome model that looks like it's going to be phenomenal in terms of the industry that he's working within. And I said, you know what's funny, man, is it took me 2 years as a business owner to realize that I needed to be working with people that were so sure, not only of what they wanted, but the work that was required to get there. And he just died laughing. And I'm like, what are you laughing about? He's like, I could have told you that when you walked out of LSU. Like, you were coaching us that way when you were coaching athletes. Like, you were pouring into us, but you never let us forget that there's an element of performance involved, where we are aspiring to keep getting better, keep pushing that standard in a way to where we know that the outcome, as much as we're pouring into ourselves, the outcome is still going to be faster swimming, better performance, whatever it may be. So these sort of details are now huge within my business model, is getting that message out, almost taking what could be a really wide funnel and getting incredibly narrow with it and just saying, listen, when you're ready and willing to do the work that comes with growth, because a lot of the time we say, yeah, I want to grow. I want to do, I'm ready for growth. The biggest jump from being thinking that you're sort of ready for growth and actually being willing to do the work toward growth, that is the connection that I'm currently overcoming as a business and saying, like, listen, when you're ready and willing, then this is a good time for us to go into partnership and start collaborating, because that's when I can be of best use to you, because you're now willing to do the work as well.
There's so many, well, not so many, but there's a handful of people that come to mind that I know listen to this podcast that we're deeply connected to, that they have some strong skills, and they have the ability to influence, and they're great humans, and they could certainly build a career, build a coaching business themselves, right? But I mean, ultimately, if you don't have a client acquisition strategy, or if you don't have a way to get in front of new people to impact lives, you don't have a business. So what was that like for you when you took that leap? How did you acquire your first, you know, dozen clients? How are you acquiring clients now? How has that evolved for you since you started all this?
Yeah, I'm such an advocate for allowing the world around you to educate you on what you do, what you bring. But you have to also be almost humble enough and vulnerable enough to sort of say that you may not like everything that you hear, you know, but it's incredibly resourceful information if you're actually willing to go and resource it. And what I'm saying here is that when I started my business, again, like I told you, it was like a long weekend. I'm done with some coaching. I'm going to start the business. I'm going to go get the LLC, start next week, Career Competitor, here we go, baby. And then sat there at my computer and was just like, who should be the first people that I go to? Or what about the people that were giving you all this feedback on, dude, you have something here, you have a way of doing what you do. Not necessarily to sell them on, hey, be a client, be a client, be a client. No, I actually went to them and said, help me see what you're able to see. Help me see that in myself. So the clearer I can get on that, then I can start branding. Then I can start marketing. Then I can start actually getting really clear on my offerings. And that was the first thing I did. And I've never stopped. I'm 2.5 years in and I'm sitting across from a client as recent as last week, actually, who was kind of doubting a little bit of why they're doing the work and what the work's all about. And then for me to stop there and say, listen, you're my most recent client. And the reason why I am so excited to work with you is because one of the first things you told me is your excitement and your curiosity and your willingness to grow. And every single new client that I get puts me one step closer to a clear avatar of the ideal client. That is what I've come to become very clear within my business, is if I see my clients for who they are and I allow them to paint that picture for me, they're painting my avatar. They're creating who it is I need to be marketing towards and moving my business towards, etc. So with all that being said, when I think about how I've gotten to where I am now, it's just that consistent willingness to say, the information is around me. Some of it should be good if I'm doing the thing I should be doing. And within that, though, there's going to be some stuff that maybe I don't want to hear, but that I need to hear. And that's going to continue to serve me as well. And that's what's brought me to my business where I am now.
That is so wise. I hope everyone goes back and listens to that. I just marked the clip. That's a beautiful clip right there. Like, every meeting I have gets me one step closer to understanding my client avatar. And it's funny because we, Landon and I, feel the same way, and we end up learning more from our clients than they learn from us. And we have some great IP, as I'm sure you do as well. Like, mm-hmm. there's amazing work to be done and value that we can give. But ultimately, the only way we can continue to evolve our offerings inside of the business is by not knowing everything and seeing the challenges that our clients are experiencing and then going find new solutions. With that, I'd love to walk through, you had mentioned, like, quote unquote, the work that you're doing with your clients. What does that look like? Because Landon and I are in a season right now of self-discovery. We're building out our C-suite, the management level of our organization. And we're really trying to understand ourselves and then bring that to the organization using things like DISC assessments and things like that. Walk us through kind of some of the work that you do in the weeds.
Yeah, I kind of consider myself the final piece. And so, perfect example of everything that you just said there, Antonio, is just like this notion of you can resource all of these incredibly well-proven approaches to acquiring knowledge about who it is that you're working with. And that is data, 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 data. And that's great data to acquire, great data to have. For me, it's about, okay, so now we have the data, now we have the information. Where does the work begin? What is that North Star that we're trying to work towards? So everything at the heart of my business is what I call this term, the optimal self. And when I started the business, I was focusing very one-on-one with that message. And so it was about, hey, you as an individual becoming your optimal self. And then as I suddenly got introduced to a team, an organization, an executive team, whatever it is, it was now like, what does the executive team look like as an optimal self? When we talk about your culture as an organization, what is the optimal self when it comes to your culture? And so this term that started in a one-on-one capacity has now blown up into this thing that can truly be a North Star for any individual, any organization, and everything in between. And so one thing that I'd love to do, well, I'm going to go into two things that I'd love to do. The first of which is what I call my strategic alignment. And the beauty of that is that I'm such an advocate for simplicity. When we start trying to reinvent wheels, people usually get lost along the way. So for me, it's sitting in a room and saying to people that are at the position that you're at, for instance, and saying, now we've got all the data. What are the intentions? What are the goals? Okay. Where are we trying to go now that we know this information? Secondly, why are we confident that we're going to get there? And thirdly, why are we concerned that we won't? Why are we concerned that we won't? Let's have that discussion. Because now the coaching is based towards something that we can measure. Because that's the hardest thing, right? In the world of coaching, everyone says it's so intangible. It's so intangible. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm pushing back. That's BS. That's BS. Like, if you want it to be intangible, you can allow yourself to see it as intangible. But if you want to have the conversation about making it tangible, funnily enough, that's where people get uncomfortable. Because it's like, oh, you can actually measure that I'm investing in myself? Ooh, that's scary. That's really scary that you're going to tell me in a month from now that I'm not progressing as an individual in my growth. So that's a very healthy way of actually going about it on the front end, is to give that North Star some direction, not just have it out there in the open, but to actually say, this is why I'm confident we're going to go there. But if I was concerned, this is where that concern comes from.
For 1 second. Sorry to cut you off.
Yeah.
Just a quick example of what some of those metrics are that you are tracking.
Yeah. Perfect example would be things such as I always feel the need to go into like actual examples within my work. So I want to just be respectful to that. So employee growth. Let me just start there. You know, client that I'm working with right now came to me, 200 people in their organization, 3 years, Steve, we want to be at 350. That's a ton of change management. That's really scary. What the heck does that look like? Where do we even start? What does 200 to 220 to 240 to 260, what does that look like within this organization? Profitability as well, you know, different client that I'm initiating working with actually in the next month or so, we're at 200 million annual globally. That's great. 250 is a big jump, you know, so where the heck do we even start with that? That's the North Star in regards to that too. So these are the sort of things I'm talking about, things that you can actually say, this is where we're at and this is where we're trying to get to. Understanding that that individual investment, that individual work that comes through coaching will facilitate the pursuit of that, and being really comfortable with challenging ourselves to say that that individual one-on-one or group approach to coaching can actually serve these clearly tangible components, which a lot of the time organizations don't want to admit. They want to say, like, if you can't tell me I put this in and this is going to come out, then I'm not interested in what you've got to offer. Whereas I have clients that can say, based on the 10, 15, 20% growth that we've seen in the last year, if we start to take steps back to this decision, this action, we can actually start to see that this all stemmed from sitting at a table one-on-one across from Steve and having conversations that we maybe didn't necessarily want to have, you know? And so that's the beauty, that's the fun part of the work, is being able to reverse engineer and see how we got to where we got to. So hopefully those are a couple of decent examples of really what I'm talking about here. And then the other thing that I work on too, and you talk about IP, is like, I have this growth approach, which I take the word growth and I break it into six different parts. The G stands for gap. R is resistance. O is ownership. The W is the work. The T is the truth. And the H is the habit. And a lot of the work that we do one-on-one, we actually use the first four parts of that, the truth and the habit. That needs to be assessed, and that comes with time. Over time, you start to learn, hey, how truthful, how honest are you about this approach and this direction that you're trying to go with the work? And then how consistent are your habits in supporting this so-called truth that you brought to the table about what you want to achieve? But I love creating gaps, and people hear the word gap and they say, run away. And I always coach my people to say, listen, what if we were to identify gaps, and how empowering and exciting a position is that for you to now be in within your company, within your career, to say that this is where I am and this is where we want to get to. The R is the resistance. What's that resistance that's preventing me from actually creating the bridge for the gap? What am I willing to own about the work that comes with that? And then how do I make sure the work is right? How do I make sure the work is right? Not that I'm working hard, but that I'm working right towards bridging that gap as well. So I spend a lot of time in the first four parts of that growth process. So that was... You got me going with my tools and my stuff like that. And so it takes a lot for me to shut up at that point, but I'll do that.
Well, the word resistance definitely rings. I connect to a book that Antonio and I have both read, The War of Art. And it says, you know, most of us have two lives, the life we live and the unlived life within us. And between the two stands resistance. I literally have that quote sitting on my monitor. If I'm looking down, that's what I'm looking at. But it just connects to what you're helping a lot of your clients with. So it sounds like a lot of your like client acquisition side, like a lot of how you're getting clients, just by serving your current clients really well and being super referable. And sometimes that in itself is the best form of marketing. Antonio and I like to say, right?
No doubt.
How are you going about retaining clients? How do you go about, you know, keeping clients happy, building that relationship? Like, what's the client life cycle look like? Is it a 6 month, 12 month engagement, and then hey, like you're all good to go? Or is the goal to retain that client for, you know, a lifetime?
Yeah, it's both, man. I say it to people all the time, which people are like, that's a weird business model. But I tell people, like, not every client is retainable or should be retainable. There are clients where you want, like, accountability for me is this piece that I'm always hopeful that the work that I'm doing with a client, I'm not holding a client accountable. I'm coaching them on how to hold themselves accountable. That is the slight difference, which again, still needs a lot of work within the coaching world. Because when we all come from sport, and we know what a coach looks like in that world, you get held accountable by an external force daily in some way, shape, or form. But I happen to believe in this world of business and this world outside of sport is that the best way you can coach is to coach accountability, not be the one holding somebody accountable. So there are people that I can tell about 6 months into a 12-month engagement, this will be a 12-month engagement. And from an ethical standpoint, it is my absolute insistence that this will only go 12 months. It's the challenge to myself to actually get this person to where they need to be in 12 months, to where I can say, listen, you're good right now. There may come a time where you've achieved whatever you need to, and we need to revisit a few things. Cannot wait for that moment, because that means that you're thriving, you're succeeding, etc. But then on the other side, again, an executive team that I'm working with right now, when I think about them, I already know based on my relationship with the president that our work will not be slowing down anytime soon. And that is because of what that 3-year, 5-year, 10-year outlook looks like for them. And so one thing I will always say with this is the caveat is that I don't work with anybody for less than 6 months. You know, it's just like that is, again, you guys have been in sport. You ain't fixing anything in a couple of months. You ain't fixing anything in 3, 4, 5 sessions. You can get started on a few things and get familiar with a few things, but nothing's going to get fixed. Nothing's going to grow. Nothing's going to improve consistently for a long time. And so I do have these minimum standards in terms of what I hold myself to within my business of any kind of engagement for sure.
I love it. And coaching, we're in the consulting world. So I wrap those up in kind of the same relative industry when it comes to services. While probably my favorite industry, selfishly, biasedly, is an amazing industry, it's also very tough. It's a very double-sided sword because of the fact that a lot of it depends on you, right? Like you're doing a lot of the work. Scale, while we can definitely try and continue to scale. Sorry, I'm getting a phone call. I'm going do not disturb here. Scale is great, but sometimes we try and scale too rapidly to where client service might dip. And then also we got to figure out what our capacity is at the same time, while also trying to continue to increase top line revenue. So all these different verticals that we're trying to optimize at the same time, walk us through that on how you've been able to identify how many clients you personally could take on. And then what does your scale vision look like over the next 3 to 5 years?
Yeah, I already know my capacity. It's getting there. I'm hitting it. And I'm so thankful, blessed, appreciative for that. At the same time, my mind has already been on that moment many months, and in fact, probably within the first couple of months of building my business, I hoped to get to that point and wanted to be prepared to get to that point. And so it's about having these coaches on a roster, on an associate roster, so to speak, that right now would be more outsourced. But that's step one of the growth is like, what does it look like to have people on some form of maybe 1099 where they're coming in and they're being of use to me? Over a smaller contract, and I get to pick and choose who those people are because I've purposely been building those relationships long before I actually needed to rely on them within my business. So there's that first part of it. But the end goal, just to let you in on my sort of 3-5 year plan, is that Career Competitor becomes a way of coaching. It becomes a way of coaching that people can say, hey, I think that's the kind of coach that I'm aspiring to be. I want to go into that academy, so to speak, and I want to get coached up on how to coach that way. And then I want to become a representative. I want to become a coach of Career Competitor and take some of that ownership that comes with it. But in order for me to continue to improve, you know, I joke with everybody. I was on a call just before you guys and said this very same thing. Anybody that's working with me now pays a Steve tax. And the Steve tax is that there is always going to be something that's not in the contract that you will receive that shows that how I go above and beyond and how you receive an optimal service. And I can never tell you what that's going to be. I can never anticipate what it's going to be, but it will come and you will notice it and you will appreciate it when it does. And I just happen to price that on the front end too, yeah, in terms of my business model. And so those are the ways I'm growing right now. And it's just a ride, man. As you guys can appreciate when you go through this ride of business, it's a ride. And if you see it as a ride, you understand it has highs, lows, lefts, rights, the whole thing. And you just got to be willing to stay in the driving seat, right?
Well said, man. Well said. Selfish question for you. Swimming question. Yeah.
That's so funny. I was literally going to ask that question for you later.
Go ahead. Sorry. So currently training for my first Ironman. So,
all right.
So 2.5 mile swim. Up until that point, the most I've ever gone is like 500 meters. And that's like 500 meters, like with barely not drowning. Right. What advice do you have for anyone that's trying to improve their swimming, who's a extreme amateur, but in other areas, maybe they're a really good runner, really good on the bike, really good athlete at whatever their previous history was, What advice do you have for like novice swimmers doing long distance swims?
I'll give you the same advice I give to every single passing swimmer. Whenever I swim, like maybe twice a year at this point, like I do anything but swimming. And when I do get in the pool and someone sees me swimming, I always feel terrible because it just so happens that someone that swam at the level I swam at, even just swimming twice a year, can still move quicker than the average person. And so I always feel a great deal of sympathy in that moment. I'm just like, I'm sorry. And they're like, where do you go? What do you do? And I'm like, I'm not going to tell you that I swim twice a year because you're going to get really pissed off and frustrated if I tell you that. So I'm not going to tell you that part, but I will tell you what I always tell people. Two things. One, your body is always longer than you're willing to give it credit. So everything that you're doing right now, you're probably doing it about 6 inches to 6 inches to maybe even a foot shorter than you actually can reach. So always be aware that there's an extra inch or two in every part of the stroke that you're not considering that you can discover.
Which helps with buoyancy, essentially.
Which helps with buoyancy. Again, we're talking about spreading that surface area over the surface of the water. So more of you over more area. It can only be a good thing. Secondly, breathing. And again, I'm sure you noticed that. And it's like, how in the world do I get control of this breathing thing? A lot of the time, people are holding onto their breath. They need to be letting it go before they breathe. Because when you go to breathe, the last thing you want to do is waste this little 2 to 3 tenths of a second on getting rid of your air to then take in your air when you're only working with about half a second to get that air in the first place. If you can give yourself the full half second that you're turning your head to the side to take a breath to inhale, you just got to slowly control how you're exhaling that air when the face is back in the water. So those are always my, every time I give that insight there, people just sort of sit there and they go, okay. And then I watch them swim off and they do it for like a 25 and then they go right back to what they were doing before. And I'm just like, well, I'm glad I gave you that. I'm glad I gave you that.
I'm going to be thinking about that though. I will be.
Yeah.
I love it.
Appreciate it.
Coach Steve, we got the executive Coach Steve. We got the swim Coach Steve on the back end. Thank you so much.
I don't
much
get many of those questions anymore, so I appreciate it, Landon. I appreciate it.
Appreciate you allowing us to pivot there. As we kind of near the wrap-up point, though, this is the Consistency Wins podcast. That's kind of what we're all about. You know, we're working towards owning the trademark of Consistency Wins. We're all about it. Everything that you had mentioned about how you go about your practice and your own life embodies consistency. Walk us through what that word means to you and how that shows up in your life and in your coaching career.
It's a part of my identity and I take pride in that. And I think a lot of the time we maybe would shy away from saying something like that publicly. Because again, to your insight there, Antonio, it's like if you watch me go about what I do, you can say, okay, this guy's clearly consistent. But for me to then say, well, listen, this is why I'm consistent. This is why I'm consistent. And the consistency comes from it mattering. It matters, you know? And so for you guys to use a term like consistency wins, there's nothing gray about that. That is as black and white a statement as you can possibly get. So the question is, if that's a black and white statement, why? It's like, well, either you're deliberately being consistent or you're not. If you're not being deliberately consistent, then chances are you're not benefiting from consistency. And it is actually that black and white. And to try to create some gray around it is doing yourself a disservice, and most importantly, doing the word a disservice. The word means to be deliberate about what you do and how you do it. And so for me, when I say I work out a minimum of 30 minutes a day, you're damn right I do. And when I don't, for whatever that crazy reason is that I don't, I'll be able to give you a pretty strong reason as to why it is. It'll probably lean on something else that I'm very consistent with in regards to my relationship with my wife, my children, whatever it may be. So for me, it's a North Star, the way I've talked about North Stars and optimal self, but it's part of my identity and it's something that I'm truly deliberate about. And I love the message. I love, if you're going to own it in every way. Own the word, but you guys are going to go ahead and actually own the term consistency wins. Good for you guys.
I love it, man. Well, thank you so much. I think that was an incredible answer. And, you know, as you had just poured into us over the last 34 minutes, everything about you is consistent, man. You're so wise and so like methodical with how you go about your approach with your clients and your business. So thank you so much for giving us that time. And we learned a lot. Landon learned some swim lessons as well, which was great. Yeah. Where can our listeners follow you? How can they connect with you?
Yeah, Landon, I'll invoice you for those swim lessons in a second here.
Please do. Please do.
but no, like everyone can find me just website. Firstly, careercompetitor.com. I'm very active on social media at Coach Steve. At Coach Steve Mella, sorry, at Coach Steve Mella on Instagram. I wish I had at Coach Steve, that'd be sweet. But at Coach Steve Mella on Instagram. And then you can find me on LinkedIn too, super active on LinkedIn, just my name, Steve Mella. But honestly, the one thing I tell everybody too is my email, steve@careercompetitor.com. I turn around every email in 24 hours. If you just want to tell me, hey, what's up? This is what I'm doing. This is what I'm working on. I'd love your support. I'd love to be a cheerleader for you. If you want to have a conversation in more detail, I'm happy to do that as well. But just appreciate the airtime, guys, and appreciate everything that you guys stand for and the mission that you guys are on too. It's awesome.
Steve, we appreciate you. And one last thing, what about the book? How can we get the book? What's the name of the book? Where can we order that thing?
That's right. I appreciate you actually, you know, reminding me, dude. Occasionally I'm just like, oh yeah, I'm an author too. I forget that part. And my wife smacks me around the head all the time.
Plug it, baby. Plug it.
Yeah. Shock the world. Shock the world. A competitor's guide to realizing your potential. And so for me, that book came from a story that I didn't tell, which is nice. I got a couple stories that I still didn't tell, but it came from a story about one of the last athletes that I worked with at LSU, helping him realize his lifelong dream of becoming a U.S. Olympian, the first in LSU's history. He then went on and actually got an Olympic gold medal with the U.S. team in the relay that he was on. And what I do is I pull from like 18 different stories from the podcast of people that have proven in their respective ways how they've shocked the world in their respective worlds. So it's been fun to actually write a book, considering that I was like a C student in English growing up and all the kind of thing. And if I told any teacher back in the day, I would have been one of the last people they would have considered that would have written a book. But yeah, that's where you can get it, on Amazon, all the kind of things like that. And let me know what you think.
Awesome. Well, we'll definitely be picking it up. Have a great rest of your day, brother. Thank you so much.
Appreciate you guys. Thank you.